Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the 99%. My name is Jesse Vondracek, coach of Top Step Training, and I am here as usual with Marilyn.
Hey, everybody. How's it going? Marilyn Chakota. You can find everything with me at mcc.coach. Happy to be here with you today, Jesse.
Good to hear. And how are you this lovely day?
Good. It's so funny when we do these now because you're in Switzerland and I'm in Arizona and we're on, you know, it's like real early in the morning here for me. So I'm like got that morning voice and kind of fog, and you're like, woohoo, I'm mostly through my day. So we got to try and match each other's energy, which usually once we chat for a little bit before we get there. So it's good. I've got a good morning coffee, although it's running a little low at the moment, but
Oh no.
I got a good strong morning coffee, and I saw you drinking orange juice.
Yeah, well, you know, as you know, I'm getting over a little bout of scarlet fever, which turns out is still a thing. In case you were curious, it's still around. So you don't have to go back to the 1600s to find it. You can just come to Switzerland, and here we have it.
I was like, when you said you had that, I was like, what? What? What are you even talking about? What is that? And I was like, and then you're like, yep. I was like, oh, Jesus. So yeah, that's nuts, man.
Yeah, it's not been my favorite 10 days that I've had in a while. Pretty serious bacterial infection that I'm dealing with. And, you know, we were chatting kind of when I first got diagnosed, and I was in Italy on the Wildcats training camp, which was also a real bummer because I was in Italy. And yeah, you know, we're there to ride bikes, and you know, it was a pretty fun little training camp they had put together. And I was supposed to be coaching, but I had to spend the second half of training camp curled up in my bed, no longer coaching. Luckily, they survived without me, and I had some good scenery of the beach to look at while I was curled up under a blanket, but I had to miss the second half of training camp, which was a bummer.
Bummer. And you know what? You know, I think people would love to hear is how you won't spend a whole lot of time in this, but I think it's valuable information. You're talking about like how you started to realize that you were pretty sick, and some people might miss those cues. And then like a little bit about, you know, you said it's been about 10 days now and you've been taking over a bit of like trying to get back to a tiny bit of movement. Not, we won't call it training, because when you're getting over something being sick and antibiotics, it's not really training, but you're being very deliberate about watching your heart rate and the indicators with that. And I think that's really obvious for someone like you and I when it comes to training and being sick, but it might be helpful for some people to hear, you know, initially what you noticed and then what you're noticing right now.
Yeah, so I guess if we were rewind the clock even a little bit further, before I actually got really sick, I had a small cough, and you could hear it kind of in my lungs, like it was kind of a deep cough, and I ignored it, and that was my own fault. But I didn't have any of those kind of benchmarks that we're talking about. Like, my heart rate was in a pretty good spot, like heart rate to power, heart rate to pace, everything was looking pretty normal. I just kind of had this deep kind of like hacking cough, and I thought I was okay. And so I kind of trained through that, and you know, I was like, training was going well. I was a little bit more tired, but I was like, well, I'm just kind of fighting off a little bit of a virus, I'll be okay. Went on training camp with this small cough, and then lost the night of sleep basically on the way to training camp. And I think that really kind of accelerated everything. And then a few days later, that cough had gotten a lot worse, and then I was really sick. And so I think, you know, one of the things we're going to probably talk about is the effect of travel. And I think I didn't really prepare myself well enough for the travel for training camp. And that was part of that, the reason. Like, I think I was already sick and there was nothing I could have done, but I think I really didn't set myself up for success in that case, and then got to training camp and then got even more sick. And then basically scarlet fever is the same bacteria as strep throat. It just kind of goes, strep throat stays in your throat, scarlet fever attacks like the rest of your body. So I basically think I had a little bit of strep throat before, didn't rest well enough, and then that became scarlet fever. So I kind of had the double whammy, then got on antibiotics, and I'm now kind of coming out of both of those. So, you know, I got probably a little more sick than I had to had I been a little bit more cautious going in. Easy to say that now. Like I said, it seemed at the time like it was something I could just kind of train through and would be fine. You know, hindsight is easy to kind of second guess that.
Well, you've been watching heart rate really closely.
Yeah, and so like I said, then it wasn't really bothering me. Like heart rate was looking pretty normal. So it wasn't the best metric then, but now, after being sick for a while, my heart rate's been pretty elevated. Resting heart rate's been elevated. Training heart rate's been elevated. And now as I'm kind of getting back into training, I've been watching that a little bit. And I mean, like right now on an easy run, easy ride, my heart rate is maybe 20 beats off what it would be, which is, I mean, for me, it's kind of like outside of that acceptable range to actually start training. It's like, yes, it's good for me to move my legs a little bit, go for an hour easy spin, go for a 30-minute easy jog. But like 20 beats is just like, it's, yeah, too much of a difference than normal to say, okay, I'm ready to like train normally. So I'm going to keep moving and keeping an eye on that and seeing, like, hopefully over time that starts to kind of come back down and starts to line up again for what I'm used to. And then if I, and then I can kind of test it and say, okay, well, if I try and ride threshold, where does my heart rate go? And just kind of like using that as a guide for how ready my body actually is to start training. Because I mean, I would love to get back to training. I've got races on my mind, but the last thing I want to do is delay actually getting better, because I'd rather have a solid block of quality training, not broken training, because I'm still trying to fight whatever sickness I still have in my body.
Yeah, that's such an important thing that you said there. I see that with sickness and injury all the time with athletes. That's something you have to manage is, you've got a race looming and they've got this date in their mind and they try and push through, whether it be injury or illness. And I call it putting the cart before the horse. They try and reverse that. And it's like if you're just a little bit more patient for a little longer and let your body dictate how the training comes back, whether it be illness or injury versus the due date of the race, then you're always more successful and you're able to carry like momentum and build fitness all the way to your race versus having these like sort of get back going and then fall apart again, get back going, fall apart. And then you typically when you take that approach, I find athletes don't even make it to the start line, or if they do, they're not in as good a shape had they just been a little more patient on the front end and build their momentum all the way to a race and let their body dictate the progression versus the date of the race. So some important tidbits there with handling that kind of stuff between heart rate and coming back and patience and paying attention to early warning signs. So not what we're going to talk about today, but I think nonetheless, like really good, like important stuff to mention at the front end before we get into our main topic for sure.
Yeah, and you're racing tomorrow, so I want to, like, how are you feeling about that?
But racing is a loose term. I am going to, there's these events here. They're not like formal, real races. Like L Tour here in Tucson's a big one. And this is a sister event to that in Scottsdale, Tour to Scottsdale. So heading up there with some friends, gonna do that. It's not as long as L Tour. That L Tour is a 100-mile one, little over 100 miles. This is only 62 miles. So, fun. Nonetheless, you're starting with like 2,000-3,000 people and a gun goes off. So there is that element of like, doing that part of it. But yeah, there's no like official results as far as podiums and all that stuff. So yeah, racing and that we're standing on a start line, the gun goes off, and whenever you have that, you go as hard as you can, but not an actual sanctioned type race.
Well, hopefully you get some local bragging rights up there. I think it's
Should be fun.
cool. And so I guess it is mid-April, and it is kind of the start of the American season. We just had Oceanside. We have Ironman Texas coming up really fast. So yeah, kind of American racing is in full swing. And yeah, the Ironman Pro Series, kind of the big Ironman races are kind of upon us. So I know we've both kind of had a lot of questions from athletes around tapering and what that should look like, and yeah, how to make sure you're kind of approaching the taper appropriately. So it seemed like a good time to chat a little bit about tapering with you today.
Yeah, I think, it is tapering is something I think that it's super important, but I think people can overthink it just a little bit. You know what I mean?
What, triathletes?
Especially in triathlon. I think if you're, there is certain sports like swimming. where the taper can really, really make or break whether someone like makes an Olympic team or not. So that is a whole different conversation. But I think with, in particular with triathlon and long distance triathlon, I think, it's important, and we're going to cover some important notes today. However, I'll preface it with the idea that be careful that you don't overthink the taper, right? And certainly there's, everything from, there's so many different thoughts on it too. Like if it's an A event and your fitness is very high and you're a real high volume athlete, there are things like a 3 week taper. There's 10 day tapers. There's people who, there's a drop taper. When to use that? I'm throwing these terms out there so people are familiar with them when they look at things. I got a lot of questions this week about bridging between two races. So we just talked about Oceanside, Texas. So if Oceanside was your season opener, it wasn't your main event, and Texas is, shortly afterwards, which is a really common combo, right? To do a half Ironman and then 2, 3 weeks later to do an Ironman. And what does that look like when you taper into the first one, then the training in between, and then taper into the second one? So do you just sit around and do nothing? Do you taper for 3 weeks into that first race? Like, what does that all look like? And I think there's a lot of different ways to approach it, and every athlete's going to be a little different, and it's definitely a huge topic, and it's huge and it's personal. And so there are some key points that we can cover for people, but all of them, it's like then you're going to have to fine tune it for what works for you and what you've been doing and that kind of thing. So
And I think it's interesting because I think a lot of people do look at like that swimming example or like single sport like that, and then try and like take from that what and how it applies to triathlon. And I feel like it really doesn't apply at all, right? And that's one of like the big things where like, yeah, in swimming you might do like a 4 week taper and you're tapering for one meet at the end of the season, and you've had a huge overload period leading into that, and you're getting ready for an event that's 18 seconds long. And so like you actually need to shed a ton of fatigue because the speed of everything is so fast, and that's just so drastically different than someone preparing for an Ironman. And so yeah, I think there are some things you can glean from like a single sport like that, but it is so different that it's like you really like if you're a triathlete, you probably shouldn't look at like what a professional or a club swim team is doing as their taper protocol because it's really not going to apply to what you're doing.
Yeah, like anything, right? I mean, people always do that. They look at cycling, or they look at running, or they look at swimming, and they look at these single sports and they try and apply it to triathlon. People need to remember triathlon is a sport of its own. It's multi-sport, and it's being able to do swim, bike, and run with a start line and a finish line. And so, although we learn a lot from a lot of different sports, it's a sport in itself, and even the taper applies to that. It's its own, we wouldn't swim like a classic pool swimmer. We wouldn't train like that. We wouldn't, all of the things. It's just, you wouldn't, and people who get wrapped up in that or get caught up in that mistake of trying to approach triathlon. That was the story of the back in the 80s. They tried to treat triathlon, swim, bike, and run, like based off the swimmers, the cyclists, and runners. And then because they were the pioneers of guiding that. We're way too far down the track to, and with so much information and so much great training out there to make those kinds of mistakes now, right? It's like triathlon, we all know it's a sport in itself, and each, not only in training, but in tapering as well, it has its own set of rules on what applies and what works for our sport. So, yeah.
So yeah, there's some kind of like big heavy hitter concepts that apply to kind of like how you apply the taper. And I think some of the things that people can think about at this point in the season is that like number one, it's pretty early season for most people, I would assume, right? People haven't been doing a huge amount of training for like what they could do, say, later in the year. And so I think that point in the season and like that length of prep time leading into the race is going to be different for a race in April, May versus a race in like October, September. And I think that needs to play a really big role in the taper. Do you kind of shift your taper based on that point in the season and based on kind of the length of the prep time that an athlete has had kind of for the race?
Yeah, the early season race and the first season opener for most people isn't their A event. So if it's not their A event, like we're using Oceanside, Texas as an example, and their training load, it's not, yeah, their training and racing load for that point in the year is also it's high because they've had a good training block, but not high in terms of the load of the year. So the taper, I don't think needs it definitely, I'll be honest, I never use like a 3 week taper. I think that's just too long for our sport. I think unless someone's training, 35 hours a week consistently, like at a pro level, then maybe that might be a case where you start dropping down volume and intensity just a little for 2 weeks. 2 weeks prior, and then that final 10-day taper. But for most people who are averaging, in that 13 to 20 hour range a week, I really think that 3 weeks is too long. They're just going to lose too much fitness. So yeah, it is different at the front end of the year. What how about you?
Yeah, I guess, well, first of all, I totally agree. I mean, I think that, like the whole idea of taper, right, is to freshen up and ideally gain a 2 or 3% so you can kind of like show up to the race at fresh, fit, and not have a ton of fatigue, right? So you need to shed a little bit of fatigue, hopefully not drop a ton of fitness. And I think if your training load and your cumulative fatigue isn't very high, then if you do a 3 week taper, you're basically just going to detrain. And yes, you'll be fresh, but your fitness will be kind of low by the time you get to the race day. So you're going to kind of thread that needle of like dropping as much fatigue as you can while not letting that fitness slip away too much. And I mean, I hate to say like I tend to do this because it's like we're kind of talking about this whole time. It depends on the athlete, it depends on the point in the season, it depends on the priority race. But I tend to think about like in that 10-ish days out, like I mean, probably 2 weeks out, their training is going to look pretty similar to, whatever it is. It might be like very race specific, but it's probably not going to look like, oh, this is less. It's going to look like, yeah, it's a pretty big workout. You're 2 weeks out. And then maybe somewhere in that week, things might come down a little bit. Like, maybe the length of the session is a little shorter or something. And it might not even be super noticeable to them until like maybe 8 days out or 7 days out where they're like, oh, I actually can see this kind of reduction in the volume. Because like especially early season, I think, yeah, people don't have that really high cumulative fatigue that they've stacked all year long. They're like, yeah, they've been training for a few months and they've done some specific work, but they can come out from under that pretty fast. And so yeah, I want them and well and also like you said, it's usually not their A race. They usually have races after this in the season. So we want to make sure that the fitness can like kind of not get too low and we want to build it throughout the year, right? So if we do a super long taper for Oceanside, and then let's say they're racing Texas, and then basically a giant taper for Texas. All of a sudden, they've had like 5 weeks of detraining in the spring, and then they've got a race in October, and it's like, well, now we need to build back up again from this giant hole. Like, yes, you got two races in there, but you spent, whatever, 4 weeks not training. So I think, really making sure you're keeping an eye on the whole season, the main priority races, and then looking at like, freshening up enough to race, but not dropping enough fatigue that like you're actually losing too much fitness to actually build throughout the year. And
And
like,
I
I'm
think,
not a huge, oh, sorry, go ahead.
no, I was just going to say, I think that where people have to be careful mostly is, each sport has a different impact. So the run is where you have to be the most careful. So I would say that, for example, if I have someone doing a very long run, maybe if they're doing like an 18 or 20 mile run, I'm not going to put that within the last 2 weeks before, like, if we're talking in terms of bridging two races, like half Ironman into an Ironman, you're looking, okay, when's their last long run in relationship to their Ironman? But they've got this half Ironman there. There needs to be a relationship between that last really long, hard run and the half Ironman, because that's where the recovery is going to, be the hardest. If someone does a pretty tough quality, whether it be a really long brick or and systematically they're very tired, or in terms of a long run, You want them to get that last long quality run in good relationship to their Ironman, but not so close to the half that they're still recovering from that. And that can be a fine line. That can be, I was sort of like, I had one athlete doing two races, and I was, juggling a little bit on, okay, I want to get a handful of 20-mile runs under their belt, and I want them to be of pretty high quality, with Texas being the main goal, but also making sure that they're not so wrecked from that run that they're not able to continue the training necessary for the big picture of both races, as well as, making sure that they come fresh enough for that first half, that they're not completely dead. And it is a fine line. And some of it I had to accept and be okay with. This athlete's going to be a tiny bit tired for this half, and that's okay, because it's not the main race. So it's like, you also have to have the conversation of, is a little bit of fatigue into this first one okay, based on the long run, with the priority being the Ironman, and their weakness in past results have been being able to run the marathon as fast as we're trying to go. So that, there is all of those things to take into account. The reason I like using specific examples, because then people can maybe learn from those examples of, where do you place these things? Whereas a ride or a swim, obviously swim, I think you can do pretty hard quality swimming and long swimming into triathlon, up into like, 3, 4 days, or within that week of the race. So swimming is going to have the lowest impact, and then riding, it's going to really depend on the athlete. But for most people, all the way up until the weekend before, they're still going to be able to do a pretty good quality long ride the weekend before. Depending, like we say, it depends on the athlete and their history in the sport and how much they train and that stuff. But still, it's important to understand the difference between the three of them.
Yeah, and I think too, like, you're talking about a really good high quality ride, and I think that most people are going to, interpret that as like that kind of race intensity, or if Ironman, maybe a little bit above race intensity, maybe even up like a little bit of threshold work. And I would say, though, that that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to go out and do, maybe this is only a Tucson example, but like, maybe you're not going to go do the shootout the weekend before the race, where you're going to be like way over race power, like a bunch of VO2 intervals or something. And like, so just to kind of like define what you mean, right? I feel like, yes, that might be a really like high quality or really hard ride, but maybe that's not exactly what you're talking about the weekend before, right? Like a good race pace to threshold ride, where you can recover from that, not at the will of, somebody like Keegan at the front of the shootout.
Yeah, totally. So like, for example, the Oceanside, you can look at that. That was a pretty a short, intense, hard effort. So once they're recovered, so they might have the next weekend, they, let's say, a highly trained athlete who's towards the front of their age group racing, we actually might not do any efforts necessarily in their long ride on the next weekend, but they might still go ride 3, 4 hours. Just nice and easy. And maybe they go find a favorite route with some climbing and that kind of thing. But they already, intensity wise, they just did a race the weekend before. They've gone really hard. And so we want to allow that recovery to happen. But with the Ironman being only, the coming week there, it's you wouldn't just go do a 2 hour easy ride. You need a little bit of volume there. So 3, 4 hours. Now, in saying that, we're not going to go do a 6 hour ride. All those 6 hour rides are in the bank. Those are done well before the half Ironman. They're done in the bulk of the training. If you're targeting the Ironman after the half, that's all done well before you start even coming down for that half. And all those really big rides, like you're talking about, where they're super hard and long, 5, 6 hours with quite a bit of intensity, quite a bit of work rate towards the two races, that kind of thing, those are all in the bag. But in between the two races, yeah, if they've done the half Ironman, they had a high quality race, a lot of intensity, might roll around, depending on how tired they are, 3, 4 hours that next weekend, just super chill, so that's, and that can vary. Again, I say all these in quotations, and with a little, if you hear a little hesitation in my voice, it's always just because all of this really depends on the athlete. So we're giving examples, and you can listen to this and go like, how does this apply to me? And what would be different for me? Would it be exact? Maybe. And would it be a little different? Probably. So all of these are good information, and then you apply it to your training and how you respond as an athlete.
Yeah, and I should know this. Oceanside and Texas are 3 weeks apart, right?
Yep. I should know
So
it
yeah,
off
that
the
is.
top of my head as well, but let me look specifically while you're talking about it.
All right, yeah, I think that there are some time gaps like that where you do have to be really careful, and you do have to. The trouble with like a 3 week or a 4 week gap is you do need to make sure you get some work in there, and then just depending on how long that gap is and how much the athlete can absorb work, you need to make sure you're also kind of fresh enough for the next race. But like you're kind of talking about earlier about sitting on the couch, like 3 weeks is way too long to just do nothing between the two races. And so yeah, you do got to be pretty careful in order to actually like build that volume up a little bit and then be able to kind of take it back down again for Texas. And yeah, I think in kind of the situation where you're bridging two races, it is that fine line of waiting long enough to build it up so that you're actually recovered from the race, but you have enough time to build it up a little bit before you have to taper again. So yeah, it is kind of definitely a little bit tricky and one of those situations where maybe you need to be, talking to your athlete a little bit more in that time to make sure that they recover enough, or talking to them right after the race and see how much it took out of them. So you can kind of design that so that, yeah, they can have like a little bit of meat. Maybe it's only 3 or 4 days or like 5 to 7 days based on how they recover. Just a kind of a brief time of like kind of training again before they taper. But yeah, I'd say like that 3 week block is, you need to have like a little bit in the middle there.
Yeah, for sure. And it's, yeah, it is essentially, there's 2 weeks of training available. You race, and with Oceanside, it was like you did the race and then you have 2 weeks available, and then it's race week again. So that can be a real tricky timing for athletes. There is also athletes that respond really well to for fancy terms or whatever they call a reverse taper, and it's where you might freshen up, let's say 2, 3 weeks, probably more like 2 weeks before your main event, and really, really freshen up. And so let's say your training load's been quite high, you're getting ready for your event training, and you might have a week that is a complete recovery type week, really deload and freshen up, and then bring training back up into the race. And I was one of those athletes. I do a lot better with that. If I rest into a race, I tend to tighten up really badly and get really sticky and flat, and there's just nothing there, and it's very, very noticeable. So I, for myself, and I've seen this with other athletes who get a little overly tight or fall really flat with rest or detrain really quickly. So that's something you can do, is you can have like a normal training load or even a high training load, have a real freshen week about 2, 3 weeks before, and then carry the momentum for a week to 10 days into the race, and see an athlete race really well. So for me, for example, I might have a pretty easy weekend the weekend before, and a couple days off that whole 2 weeks before, and just really, really rest. But then you'll see me the day before half Ironman going for a 2.5 hour real easy ride with just a couple pickups or something, and also have done a swim. People think, man, that's a really long time to be out on your bike. Again, the run is trickier, so I might not really run that much that week, but I'll do quite a bit of easy cycling to keep things ticking over and not have that, tighten up and feel kind of flat type stuff. So I think, we say that there's, if your training volume is very, very high and you need to deload a lot, does it start further out? Is it later in the season or early in the season? These are all points to take into account. Classically, a 10-day taper is very normal. Unless you're stacking races, then I think it needs to be closer to that front end of that first race, and then you include what, all the way to that main Ironman race based off the half. That's a little bit different. And then the drop taper is more like that 72-hour, 48 hours of really like hyper freshen, just a couple little pickups here and there, and then go race. So, and then there's that, what I'm just describing now, that reverse taper, where you freshen further out from the race and then do some work into your event. And I had someone send me a message, and you had some, you were like, oh, I read the message to you, and you said, oh, I know exactly what he's talking about. So he sent me this message about
Sorry,
your
wait, but can I talk about reverse taper before we dive into that?
Oh,
We'll skip
yeah.
that.
I was, yeah.
All right, cool. So I just wanted to touch on I feel like I've seen the reverse taper work really well. It actually doesn't work well for me, which is a bummer because I feel like I derive confidence from like that kind of reverse taper style, and I think a lot of people do. So I think if you have like if confidence is a really important factor for you, then kind of that freshening up early and then taking that 10 to 6 days and just building normal training into a race can make you feel like you're ticking things over and make you kind of really confident that you're in a good spot going into a race. But I think that same thing needs to happen, right? You need to be fresh. And so how you do that is you just freshen up early and then you do nothing in that week that's actually like making you super fatigued. It's like fatiguing you enough that you can kind of recover day to day. So you're hovering, like your training stress is pretty low overall, so that you're still fresh on race day, but you feel good and like you're moving well. That's kind of you're talking about, like tightening up and not feeling like you're moving well. So you have that kind of normal rhythm, and I think especially for high volume athletes, which I would call you, have a high volume athlete, Marilyn, that like if you're used to training that that 30, 35, 40 hours plus, then it can be really hard. Like you're used to performing under load. Like you've done it, every day in and day out for, X amount of days in a row, so that to just kind of drop all that load, yeah, you're going to feel kind of rusty. So I think especially for kind of high volume athletes and, again, not to like pigeonhole people, but kind of like strength athletes, people that have like a little more power in them, they seem to really do well, from my experience with the kind of reverse taper where they're kind of ticking along leading into that race. And then they don't have that kind of like heavy feeling or like that they can't move. And so, yeah, I think it can really work well for some people and it's definitely worth trying. But again, whole idea of the taper is to feel good on race day and be fairly fresh. So like you need to do that. And I see some athletes, triathletes tend to love training, right? And they like try to skip that part of the reverse taper. And it's kind of the most important part, right? You need to have that freshening up at some point in that, like whatever, 2 weeks leading in. Whether you put it right before or whether you put it 2 weeks out, can you can kind of move that around a little bit, but it has to be there. You have to freshen up. But yeah, that can really be one way to help you feel really good on race day. Sorry, so your athlete you were talking about.
Oh, that's all really good stuff. Absolutely, for sure. I agree with all of that, especially the, I think the more, more heavily muscled athletes, it can, the what happens is people, they tighten up, right? You tighten up really badly. And so no matter how much stretching and massage you get, so keeping that light ticking over really, really helps that kind of thing. So but yeah, so to move on, this athlete, he had messaged me about, and I really want to hear your thoughts because you very specifically like perked up and said, I know exactly what he's talking about. And it said, volume was really high into the first half and feeling pretty beat up, tapered into it, felt good but not great before it, had a good race and a good run. Felt a little tired afterwards, but not too bad. Felt pretty good. And then the next day felt strangely amazing. And then they're headed into Texas and a little bit worried about, are they peaking too soon? And so, I really, because you perked up quite a lot when I mentioned that, I want to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, so I've been coaching myself for a long time now, and I haven't always been the best at it, believe it or not. So there's this stretch of time where I was heading into early season 70.3, and I forget if it was Oceanside or Wildflower, but I definitely didn't taper enough. Went to the race, felt pretty good because again, like we were talking about, I was like training pretty high volume, so I could not taper a lot and like still have a pretty good, 95% day, but and this sounds almost exactly like what this athlete's talking about. Yeah, I had a good day, but kind of what you want to have out of a taper is you want to have like that 102% day, right? You want to like gain a little bit kind of above what you think you can do and not have that 95% day, which if you're ticking things over and you back off just a little bit, you can have that kind of 95% day. And then I took like 2 days off with travel, and I came back to Tucson, and I felt pretty good. And I went on a ride with a buddy, and he was like, "Hey, by the way, we're going to TT to Windy Point." And I was like, "This is my first ride back. I've done nothing for 2 days. This is like, I feel kind of springy, but like, this is a bad idea." And of course, I did it anyways. And we TT'd to Windy Point, and I had my fastest time by like 5 minutes. And it's because I actually did like the taper after the race. So it was like my tapered race effort was, on a Wednesday after the race going up to Windy Point. So thanks, John Sheeran, for pulling me to Windy for my fastest time. But I'd say the timing of that was pretty off. And and then I was incredibly sore after, because it was like when you have those 102% efforts and you actually dig deep, that's when you get that fatigue. And that's when I got it. And then I was like, oh yeah, definitely missed the mark on this one a little bit. And so it sounds a little bit like what this athlete is having, where they're like, yeah, I bounced back pretty fast in that race. And I think that in this case, like he's got a race in like less than 3 weeks now, right? He's bridging between Texas. So it could be a really good thing that he wasn't totally fresh for Oceanside, because he's maintaining through till Texas. And like, I think, what you don't want to do in that situation is kind of like overuse that fitness in this 3 weeks. Like, you don't want to do what I did. You don't want to go on a time trial and totally blow all this kind of like freshness that you have, because you're trying to just, again, keep that, get a little bit of fatigue over the next 3 weeks and then shed it so that you can kind of show off your fitness at Texas. And I think that, you can, like, maybe he could have gone a little bit faster in Oceanside if he didn't have Texas coming up, but he does. So he's doing it right, right? And so now it's just about like maintaining a little bit of that fatigue and like, starting to feel a little bit of freshness as he's getting closer. And that's a good thing. So I would say things are going well, and just make sure you train enough between now and then so that you can not get too fresh too early. But I guess what I'm warning against is that going way too high above race intensity or above threshold right now, where like you could definitely hurt yourself because you have a little bit of freshness. So you don't need to do that. You need to make sure you're just, stacking enough fatigue to not be too fresh too soon. I don't know. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, no, it's yeah, that's I would say the same thing, is that it's clear. We know this athlete and we know the situation, so it's a little easier for us to talk about it. But it's, their Oceanside was not their main event, so it sounds like, yeah, they're worried, hey, did I not go hard enough? It's clear, like, your fitness is super high going into this race, which you want it to be because you're headed to an Ironman, but carrying still a tiny bit of fatigue into the first race, so not able to tap into like probably 100% of what they were capable of because of the fatigue, which is okay. They had, pretty average day, which is all right, but then feel really good afterwards because now they are fresh from resting right before they did a race effort, which they wasn't 100%, but you still gain fitness from it, and you gain enough fitness from the race, but like you said, not to the point of like racing so hard that they damage themselves, because there was a little governor there from the fatigue. So they gained just a little bit of fitness from the race, but not didn't do a whole lot of damage, because they had a governor of not being able to go right to the well. And that freshness, the couple days afterwards, they feel pretty good. They've got that little bit of fitness from that effort. And so exactly, now it's like, okay, let's just temper this all the way into the one that really matters, because all this whole plan has been directed towards the main show, which is the Ironman. And it's, hold on to that fitness, take that fitness from the event, and just kind of tick it over, and make sure that you show up there ready to really lay all your cards on that Texas day, and not do it in training before, like the weekend before, because you're just excited and anxious about it. So yeah, that's I think exactly the same thing that's going on there. So yeah, when you race really, really hard in a race, or like you said, a really hard effort. So say you did the half and you went, you pushed yourself, you're gonna be sore afterwards. But if you've got a bit of fatigue and you're not able to do that, then you're not gonna be as sore or tired afterwards. And that's likely what happens. And then it's like, oh, and now I'm fresh and got a little bit of fitness here, so I feel amazing. So just be patient with that would be my advice to that athlete for sure.
Yeah, I mean, especially with an Ironman coming up, patience is a virtue here. And I guess the other thing I want to touch on a little bit that I talked about with kind of my Italy trip is travel. And, I feel like it's easy to take travel for granted. I feel like I've probably talked about this far too many times on the podcast, and maybe it's because of my current situation where I'm doing things like flying to Tucson for camp, and it's like, oh, this kind of travel is actually really hard. It's a lot harder than just driving to Oceanside. But I do think, it is important to really take that into consideration, like what your travel is like, how stressful is that? And, like for me now, if I'm traveling to a race solo versus if I'm traveling to a race with the entire family, what does that kind of stress load look like? And, these are stresses that don't go into Training Peaks, so it's easy to kind of discount them as not stress, but these can be stresses that really can, affect you going into a race. And, especially if it's not something you're used to and you're kind of having to do all those race prep things with travel, with a, with a family or whatever. And, or if you, even if you're by yourself, you're like, oh, I'm at this race in Mexico by myself, trying to figure all this stuff out. So, really trying to take into consideration all the extra things that happen during race week and understand that they are stressed, and you can't just say, hey, like the ideal taper is this 7-day block, no matter what all these other circumstances look like. And so, really being cognizant of that fact. Like I have this memory of landing in Louisville, and my flight was like 6 hours late. I was, getting ready for the Ironman. And I was like, well, I was supposed to do a 30-minute shakeout jog, and it's 11:30 p.m., but like it's on my schedule, so I'm going for this 30-minute shakeout jog, and I'm running around at midnight in Louisville like 3 days before the race, like an idiot, like just total robot mode, could not take that off my schedule. And then of course the next day I was like, ah, I'm really tired. It's like, well, yeah, probably shouldn't run at midnight, like, but it can be easy to get caught in that mode, right? And so it is just really trying to think about, like, hey, again, goal of the taper, goal of this period is to be fresh on race day. And so, like, running at midnight 3 days before because it's on the schedule is probably not going to make you fresh on race day.
Yeah, travel is huge. If you go through my site and look in articles, I have a whole article on taking travel into account with your races and your taper. It's a pretty important thing, especially if you're changing time zones or international travel. If the flight is very long, if it's, 6 hours plus, that has a big impact. And you'll see people make the mistake as they do like their last very hard session the day before because they think, well, I'm going to get to rest all day the next day. And you really, you're driving your immune system down and then throwing yourself up into a plane and sitting up there and with all these people and up at whatever elevation, and you're in this tube with all these people with a suppressed immune system and kind of a little bit overtired, and travel is stressful and tiring, and then they get to the other side and they're a little bit too wrecked from it all. So it is. Sometimes it's good if you've got really big travel to rest a little bit into the travel. Make sure you take that into account. And then the first day you get there as well. So I always, if people do big travel to a race, like international travel, it's really important that that first 24, maybe even 48 hours is pretty easy, and just loosen up and make sure that you feel good and that you're adjusting to this the time zone and all of that, and then do a little bit of training into your race. So that again, taken into account, can change up the training as well and the taper. So there might be a rest into the travel. The travel, of course, you're losing a little bit of time and training, and then actually a little bit of rest right after the travel, that first 24, 48 hours, and then build a little momentum and dust out all that cobwebs into the race. I call it like opening up an engine a little bit, like a race car, and getting it ready to race. So I think that those are important things. Even a long drive. I mean, if you train really hard and then you jump in a car and sit in a car for 8 hours or 12 hours or 6 hours, there isn't the same stress as a long haul flight. However, it's really easy to tighten up in your calves and your hamstrings and your hips. And so you want to make sure that you finish up your really hard training a couple days before and make sure you're not overdoing it the day before. And then once you hop out of your car, give yourself a little bit of time to loosen up and just get the blood flow going and check out, make sure that the calves are loose, the hamstrings are loose, the hips are loose before you start getting into race intensity. And when you hit a race environment with all of your peers and the excitement, it can be tempting to hop out of the car and, go sprinting off faster and harder than what you think, whether it be on the bike or the run or whatever. And then that's when, you pull a calf or your hamstring kind of goes, or you start to cramp or something like that, and you're just a day or two out from your race. So those things are very important and can make or break people's races for sure.
Yeah, I think, anytime you're sitting for a long amount of time, it's pretty hard on the body. So yeah, long drive, long flight, anytime you're kind of squinched up, oh, excuse me. Anytime you're squinched up like that, it can be tricky. So yeah, I think it's really good to, yeah, take that into account. And then like you were talking about, like being careful when you're coming out of that travel as well. Yeah, great stuff.
Yeah, so like I say, big topic. If you I think we have a podcast from, I don't know, it might be a couple years ago on tapering as well. So it'd be interesting to see how much we cross over, if you listen to both cross over or have new insights on it. So, hopefully going into your races here, have a listen to this one, have a listen to our older one. Same again on my site. If you dig through the articles, I have quite a few articles on tapering and travel and those kinds of things. You can dig through there and find some good information. And then, trial and error is going to be specific to you, and it changes based on, your racing, where you're at in your career, what your season looks like, all of those things. So, really read what might have worked before might not work again. So, play around with an open mind of where you're at with your training, your race season, and how you've evolved as an athlete. Take that into account. Some people get stuck in that rut where they're like, this is what I've always done, so this is what I'm gonna do. And it's like, well, hopefully you've evolved and grown as an athlete, and it might look a little different. So take that into account as well. I think, all really important stuff. And like you say, the main goal is, there's so many tools out there now with freshness and fitness, and you can graph everything and use those as guides, and they can help you. They don't tell the whole story. They're not 100% accurate. They don't take into account a lot of little things, like we're talking about travel, sleep, personal life, home life, work. If you do the gym, all these different things that might not take into account if you're not diligent about, loading every single swim, bike, and run, and adding TSS to every single one of them. So it's like, those graphs and charts, they can give you a little idea, and they are a helpful tool. However, make sure that you're also taking into account the art of that and all the other little fine things that can make or break your day and your fatigue. And the main goal, like you say, is show up fit, fresh and excited and ready to race. And if you're excited to be there, that can make up for a lot of things.
Yeah, and the only thing I want to add to that is that I think that, people tend to not always like trust themselves, and sometimes you're like, hey, I feel tired. You can kind of lean into how you feel a little bit and maybe make some decisions there, like based on, what's happened and how you're feeling going into a race. Like, you can't do that the other way and be like, oh, I want to go for a 3-hour run because I feel good. But, you can kind of like use how you feel to kind of dictate that training a little bit, and don't be afraid to kind of, yeah, trust yourself, because, athletes at the end of the day know themselves better than anyone else. So whether it's like, hey, I need to have a conversation with my coach a few days out because I'm feeling this way, or whether you're self-coached and you just need to kind of like change that path ever so slightly. But yeah, you can definitely kind of lean in to how you're feeling going into a race, and knowing that the point is to feel good. So what can you do to help that? But yeah, thanks for chatting about tapering. And if people have questions, they can always reach out to us, and we can help them, bridge the gap between Oceanside and Texas, or yeah, hopefully help them feel good on race day.
Awesome. Thanks for the conversation. Cheers.
Yeah, thank you.